Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to a very special, I know I say they're all special, but this one really is special, Strip Search with London and Shrianka. We haven't been here in a while. There's been things going on in the world, I don't know if you've heard, but we are back with our very first pandemic podcast to talk comic strips and how they relate to what's going on in the world right now. I'm Pete Shrianka, and I'm here with
Dave London.
That's right. Dave is sitting outside his very humble abode. I hear the sounds of birds chirping, and it's inspiring me, actually, to hear the sounds of nature out there, Dave.
I am out on the back deck. It was raining earlier today, so finally is nice, and that stir craziness of being in the house. Plus, I don't want all our viewers looking, you know, in my house and seeing all my books like with you there.
That's right. Yes. People can, you know, but I strained up a little bit. You know, we actually straightened the books on the bookshelf. That's been one of my projects since we've been inside. Little things like that, clean out the basement, you know, not much else. Luckily, Dave and I are both working at our day jobs still, even if we are doing them out of our home. And I know a lot of people aren't as lucky to have jobs that translate to that. So I'm not going to complain about being stuck inside. And we've had a chance to work on our comic strip, Pet Peeves, which we switched over to a quarantine theme fairly early on in all this. We've been doing that for a couple of weeks. And that's what we're going to be talking about today when we have our special guests come on. We're going to be talking to three cartoonists to varying degrees have sort of tackled the quarantine in their strip, which is, you know, it's kind of a serious situation in the world, and what we do is not that serious. I know if you would you agree with that, Dave?
Yeah, I would hope people laugh at us, you know, in the right way.
That's the idea. So we'll talk about what it's like to try to be funny when the situation you're writing about is not necessarily as humorous as the usual day-to-day things you're making fun of. And we figured since the whole world is on Zoom, why not do it on Zoom? And also we will have the audio for you folks who would rather not look at our ugly mugs for the full duration of this podcast. You can just listen to us like you usually do. But, you know, unfortunately this came right as Dave and I were starting to plan another round of promotion for our book Pet Peeves, which collects the first 400 Pet Peeves comic strips that we've done over the last several years. And we were actually booked at an event in Lowell at the Mill Number 5, which is a great little venue they have up there. And it was sort of a book and other paper product type sale that was going on, and we were planning to be there, and I believe if I recall correctly, we chickened out first, and then they canceled the event.
We were prescient, really, is what it was. We were prescient. We knew that it was going to be canceled, so we canceled early before the rush.
Yes, exactly. And that was that very first weekend, which it seems like so long ago now, but where just everything and just fast and furious was being canceled left and right. And then, you know, within the next couple of days, it seemed like everybody was sort of in their house.
We also had another event. We were going to do the Boston Kids Comic Con. That got canceled.
That's right. That was scheduled for April. And now I believe they are talking about bringing it back in the fall. But, of course, everything is up in the air. That's a great event that we've done 2 years in a row. And hopefully they will be back. And you will hear about it here first if they are returning. So unfortunately we have some unsold books sitting in my closet upstairs. You could still buy them on Amazon, search for Pet Peeves by London and Chianca if you are so inclined. And in the meantime, we're cranking out new ones and, you know, sort of keeping up with it best we can. You know, and trying to sort of paint a picture of what the Peeves family is dealing with in this crazy time. You know, people who followed the strip know that they moved in with Jazz's parents a few months ago when they had some issues with their house. So they were all quarantining together, which adds to the hilarity. And similar to what I have here, we have for many years lived with my in-laws in an addition off of our house. So we are all in it together here in my house.
So I wondered where the ideas for some of the strips come from.
Oh, yeah, it's all me. It's all me. But we don't want to belabor the point when we have some very special guests waiting in the wings. So, Dave, do you have anything else before we prepare?
I guess the only thing would be sort of in the cartooning world, sort of a tip of the cap for a passing of Mort Drucker, the famous Mad Magazine cartoonist who passed away recently. Obviously a huge name in the cartooning world. And Pete, you and I were talking about that right before we started the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the way he captured people, I mean, you know how hard caricatures, you know, can be. I know you've, you know, not that I know, I can't do anything. But you have told me in the past how hard they are. And the way he was able to capture, you know, every single, you know, celebrity and actor and politician. And I remember, you know, in the 70s, you know, when I was a kid, Mad Magazine was huge. And his movie spoofs, you know, I remember the Star Wars and Saturday Night Fever and, you know, you name it, Rocky. I mean, and they, you know, they were a little mean. Actually, but the drawings were unbelievable.
So anyways, a tip of the cap to the great Mort Drucker.
That's right. And hopefully we, you know, we won't see any other, you know, major figures in the industry go the way of Mort during this whole affair. But I guess we will see. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we are going to be back with our three special guests, Pat Sandy, Tim Jones, and Steve McGinn. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody. We are back with Strip Search, the comic strip podcast, with me, Pete Chianca, and Dave London. Give a wave, Dave. And our very first Zoom podcast, and three very special guests to join us on this Zoom podcast. We have Pat Sandy, who is the genius behind Next Door Neighbors, which you'll find on Go Comics. We have Steve McGinn of Tunes by Steve-O, very popular on Facebook. And we have Tim Jones of Sour Grapes, which appears in newspapers around New England and the rest of the U.S. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming around. So we're going to talk a little bit about sort of, you know, what the craziness of the world has done to the world of cartooning and how, you know, we've approached it. And, you know, Dave and I, with our strip Pet Peeves, pretty early on, we decided, you know, this is what is happening in our lives. I think this is what has to be happening to the characters in our strip. And the interesting thing about cartoonists, particularly web-based cartoonists who can turn things around more quickly, I feel like cartoons were one of the, maybe the first sort of, you know, storytelling genre that tackled this. It was the first place I saw it mentioned anywhere, because obviously TV and movies and these other, you know, they're way behind. Plus, they're not filming. So, you know, I feel like cartoonists had an opportunity to sort of jump on this, you know, at the very start. But anyway, that's just for people who don't know, why don't we go around and talk just a little bit. Pat, tell us a little bit about sort of Next Door Neighbors and, you know, the way you approach that strip.
Well, yeah, it was tough. I mean, when you say we dove in fairly quickly, we did. I know that I have to say, if you go by timeline, you know, all hell supposedly broke loose in mid-March. And I was, I usually plan out, I'm usually about two and a half weeks ahead. And at that time, it got to be so pervasive. And I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but there was no way that you could write anything without this crap in your face all day, right?
Oh, so I realized
pretty early on that I knew I was going to have to do something. And then the difference, when you're working in a character-based narrative as opposed to a panel like Steve's stuff, you find yourself dealing with two filters. You're filtering with the pandemic, and then you're filtering with the characters, and then it has to make sense with those characters. And that becomes kind of an interesting little chore to deal with. So I had to kind of stop my ideating, so to speak, and think, okay, now how can I organically bring this into the strip? And it really wasn't easy. I had storylines that I was already arced out on. I mean, really long storylines that involve, think about this, that involve travel, that involve people outside. You know what I mean? And suddenly, if you didn't address it, it would seem like it would not ring true. Does that sound familiar to everybody?
Do you remember Poochie the dog from The Simpsons? My home planet needs me.
Yeah, right.
I'm sort of like,
that's what it is. It's like,
wow. Out of nowhere.
You know, and there's something to be said for reflecting real life. I realize, you know, I keep hearing this phrase, escapist entertainment. And I realize it's kind of what cartooning is, but in a way you have to reflect what's going on out there. Is that a fair?
Can you escape? It's been really hard.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It isn't. You can't escape. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah,
as hard as you try, you know?
Yeah.
I think the sort of seeing characters in a familiar situation in a way is comforting to people, maybe more so than seeing them go on business as usual while that's not what you are in.
Well, right. And I think that, you know, it would be very easy to go for the more extreme elements of what's going on. I mean, I could have thrown Trump in there every single day and just enjoyed it, but I the thing is it was just so pervasive that I personally, from my perspective, had to find a fairly organic way to put it in there without being too panicky. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't, Dave, and Pete, you guys did the same thing. You organically.
Pretty much. You know, we had tried to, we had touched on it. We had the family go on a cruise. I think that was back in February.
Last fall, or what, it was over the winter, right?
Yeah. And that was something we had planned a while back, because I had gone on a cruise like last summer and
you were ahead of your time, man.
Yeah. So I said, you know, there was definitely material there. But by the time we got around to doing it, we said, oh, we got to address this quarantine thing. We did a little jokey thing about how, you know, CJ sneezes and is immediately ostracized and thrown into court.
We're ahead of the curve, though, man.
We were. It just was fortuitous.
Yeah.
But then it was around the same time, you know, when you were taking note of this stuff in March, that we decided, you know, but let's see what happens with you know, with the family going through what we're going through. Now, you're Steve, you know, I feel like almost immediately, you know, and you do a much more absurdist take. It's not a character-based take. It's you know, some of the, you know, really crazy, absurd, satirical panel.
What the hell does that mean? Like, kind of things. No one gets it. That sort of stuff.
You're right. The stuff that nobody understands.
Right. That's me. I haven't done sequentials since God, the late 90s. And it's pretty, I'm not even in the discussion where, you know, how you have to turn on a dime, you know, whatever storyline you had going. Because I think, you know, when this was just sort of ramping up and we were like, you know what, maybe, I'm not sure. My first cartoon had to do with all the chicken soup being gone at the supermarket. Chicken noodle soup, and that was it. The other soups were there, you know, and that was kind of like, oh, you know, people get to get a little sick, you know. It's kind of flu season or whatever. And, you know, lo and behold, there's like nothing at the store, you know what I mean? You know, the paper towel aisle is just, you know, one of those echo chambers. And so when you're a single panel person, it's like a disease. I've done 50 straight COVID virus cartoons in a row, and I'm looking to not. You know, I can't stop. It's horrible. And when you're single panel and you're thinking of stuff, it almost feels, I don't know, a little tone deaf if you somehow don't do it. Like,
I would agree with that on any content.
Here we are, like, you know, there's no COVID-19 for Dummies book, you know, we don't really know how to approach this. And so every day it's in your face. As cartoonists, I think we probably want to have the desire to have people like laugh and that kind of thing. And obviously the subject matter itself is not funny, but at the same time, you know, you got to play ball. The game must go on. So, you know, you try to, I guess you really got to go gallows on this one. The kind of funny, you know, the guy was chopping someone's head off, but there's a joke in all of it. You know, that's kind of the vein that I've gotten in. I know it's just a little tricky. It's like, but if you can make people laugh in the middle of all this, you're sort of helping out, I guess, you know.
It is, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Now, Tim, you know, of all of us, I think you'd have the best excuse for not doing it, because yours is a real sort of like gag a day, you know, very, you know, I feel like old fashioned strip. Well, you have started to broach the topic.
I'm actually doing ones. I did one on social distancing with Constance in the cafe, working in the cafe and that, and, you know, some other stuff. Cause it, you know, my strip is basically my life and what I'm experiencing. So, you know, it's all affecting everybody. And, so the way it's affecting me, be situations that I'm in, of how, again, how it's affecting me. So I am starting to do some episodes on it, and you know, seeing how it affects. If it's affecting me, then it's affecting my characters. You know what I mean? Because they're a part of me. So it's you know, my next one, it's gonna start being a little more subtle. I don't want to beat the thing to death. You know what I mean? As far as the story goes, but
you make a good point though, Tim. If it affects you. And I don't want to speak for everybody, but I mean, if it's affecting you as you write, me as I write, or as we all write, it seeps into the work. It really does. Right. Yeah.
I didn't want to just write ones just to say, okay, I'll do one on, you know, whatever, you know, like Steve said, things missing in the store or stuff like that. You know, if something that it happened to me or something that I heard someone say, well, you know, it happened this way in to my guys in the strip and stuff. And what better, you know, it's easy. It's actually easy for me to write because my strip is Sour Grapes. So it has to do with the downside of things and then pulling some comedy out of that. So, so that's me.
Yeah. I think, you know, I guess the question then becomes sort of how, when you talk about, you know, like Steve, you were talking about the gallows humor involved, that like to what, how far sort of is too far when you're dealing with something this serious that everybody's, you know, that everybody's dealing with.
That's the trick, man, that finding that sweet spot where, you know, what's the, please half of the people, half the, whatever Lincoln said, there's some people that are always going to just not, you know, they're not wrong. They're going to just hate all of this stuff and they don't want to, you know, you can watch so much CNN, right? Isn't that what everyone says?
Yeah.
Like after 9/11, people just all turned into zombies for a while and they had every right to, you know, but.
Right. And this is, you know, this is with 9/11, and that's the only other sort of, you know, incident that I could compare it to, in that it was so all encompassing. Yeah. But even that, you know, after a little while, you know, we moved on to other things, at least in our day-to-day lives. This is affecting everybody all the time, you know, over a very long period, you know, and we had talked about, and it's interesting to look at, like, you know, so, like, Pat, your characters don't have the most empathy, some of them, which I love.
Well, you know, I've said this in other interviews. I mean,
it's like real life, though, you know.
Yeah, these are not likable characters, and
on purpose,
which is fun to work with. And the fact is, you still have to kind of acknowledge that they too, as unlikable as they are, would experience everything else that we're all experiencing. 9-1-1 was a massively singular event, and you know, and if we all recall, I mean, it was astonishing how the country united. You know, I mean, it just everybody mm-hmm. came around this one event, and you know, and humor and everything followed it at the time. And I think people kind of marched forward and shook it off and kind of said, this is America and all this type of thing. This particular situation, though, is such a mess and so everywhere and so hard to, you know, 911 is pretty easy to say. Somebody attacked us and the towers went down. Boom. And that's kind of, you know, this one is so hard to get your head around and it's so massive. And it affects almost every aspect of contemporary culture that I'm speak for myself as a writer and a cartoonist had absolutely no choice but to get some of that addressed and get it out of my, you know, out of my system. Really,
it's not going away anytime soon either. That's the thing. It's kind of like just shaving off like millimeters at a time, if it does.
Yeah.
And so it's almost, I hate to say, compare it to, but it's almost become the culture of
and you take your material, and I was about 2.5-3 weeks ahead, and I had to kind of stop for a second, and I had buffer time to do this, so I was kind of fortunate. But I put aside the stuff that was ready and said, well, I got a few weeks here to kind of figure this out. And I did. It was a little bit softer than I wanted to start off with, but that's kind of how I was feeling, you know.
I mean, go ahead, Pat.
Well, I was going to say, this stuff comes from kind of here for everybody, and you have to kind of assimilate it, and then it comes out the other, you know, out of the system, I suppose. It's kind of hard.
I think you're touching on a possible key trick that we can use in all this, and that I've always tried to make my stuff relatable. You know, even if it's relatable, I used to say I write for the one other guy who's laughing in the movie theater, some reference.
That's awesome. Yeah.
On the screen, and there's probably a lot of people that aren't, but this is relatable to everybody. And you try to find that thing that everyone relates to, like, you know, all the way from the other side of the planet or whatever to, you know, Cleveland and Boston. And then from that, you go, what would kind of, you know, I'm a first responder, but at the same time, I might be able to, if something happens, like a bird flies in the hallway or something and goes to the bathroom, or there might be something, a small smidgen of like, God, that was kind of funny. Like, you still got to be a human being, you know?
Yeah.
And, something that we all are doing, which we're all doing COVID-19. And I don't want to be that really rich guy with a giant swimming pool saying we're all in this together. Which is a little annoying after a while, but
yeah, I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, me and my Maseratis are all in this together.
Yeah.
But, did you guys feel some semblance of, sorry, Pete, I'm asking a question.
Go right ahead.
Did you guys, all of you, find some semblance of a responsibility to start doing something in your strips? You know, thought that, you know, you wanted to, try and find some level of levity in this to try and.
Are those two different questions though? Like the levity thing, I think is full tilt with most of us.
Yeah.
The responsibility. I was trying to, but I
Steve or Tim and Steve, all you guys, I kind of looked at it as inevitability. I don't think I felt a necessarily responsibility.
That's probably a better word.
Inevitability, because it really was. I have to tell you, by mid-March, my head was exploding personally. And I just simply, you know, you got all this material and then suddenly you have to rethink it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so
a lot.
I didn't want to get into really didactic type of stuff. So that's kind of why I went over to Deke, you know, the bar kind of shuts down because that's happening. You know, and then I had Norman Jan, you know, they went down and started cleaning the basement for a week and a half. And that's pretty typical as well. I mean, I'm still cleaning over here. I actually have had a ton of time to clean things up. So, you know, sitting around the house doing that. So.
Hey, my whole house and my garage are completely clean.
Boom. There you go.
It's all done.
That's the stuff I think that I think people get. You know, we all know somebody who is probably affected by all this with their job and all that type of stuff. And certainly everybody's cleaning the house up and everything. So it's more,
if I could find Swiffers, I would, but you know,
exactly. Yeah. The guy that created Swiffers is right here in our area. He's got the dude that created Swiffers. He's in town. So
you must have a clean house.
Oh, it's gotta be fabulous actually. Yeah.
Lemony fresh all the time.
They're going to be covered with the torches and pitchforks for Swiffers at his place.
Oh, yeah.
So, burn the monster, yes.
But it really does kind of hit you pretty quickly. And so I started putting this in there, not every single day, but I mean, I started at least addressing it. And it's, you know, it's been okay so far, I think. But it's tough. It really is.
Do you think it has to be, you know, out and out funny all the time? Or like, you know, we sort of toyed a little bit. Like I had one strip where, you know, the Freddie, the son, is, you know, finds out his baseball season is going to be canceled. And we really sort of went more for poignant, you know, rather than funny with that one. And, you know, it got me just wondering, you know, where is that line? And can you maybe not get serious, because that's not what we do, but, you know, treated maybe with a little less levity.
Well, I started the storyline with them cleaning the basement, and a typical Norm moment is, you know, Norm has absolutely zero self-awareness. He's kind of that guy. And, you know, she works him over. Let's go clean the basement out, and pushes him, go get ready, go get the broom. And he says something to the effect of, you know, and the crisis just got worse. So, I mean, his trivializing, because now he has to go clean the basement, is very typically Norm. And that's where you find, at least when it's character-based humor, that's where you find this sort of a holistic way to bring this into it without being too obvious about it. So, you know, he was still Norm. After all is said and done, he's still Norm.
I remember that one in particular. And the
crisis just keeps getting worse, so he's just a big baby about it. He wants to sit there and drink beer or whatever.
Hey, Pete and Dave and possibly Tim, possibly Pat, I'm not sure. I was working on trying to work out a gag. Who's got social distance learning going on in the house right now with the kids?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So
got high school and college here.
Right, just high school with me. But I was trying to figure out a gag where is your kid enjoying like the other things like sports and theater and music or art or whatever a little more than you know. English, French, math, chemistry, because this is a gag. I'm just trying to figure something out. Basically, what they got going right now is everything but the fun part of school.
Right.
That's it. Right. All of the worst parts of school are it for them. And how depressing that's got to be, like, you know, hanging out with your friends, playing ball, you know. So I'm just trying to figure out, is there something light in that? Like, I don't know.
Absolutely.
It's a pretty dark subject.
No, I feel terrible. You know, I mean, in college maybe it's a little different. I mean, you're missing a lot there too. But again, we were talking before. You know, my son's a senior in high school. You're supposed to be doing all this great end of high school.
A senior?
Oh yeah, he was captain of the baseball team. Now there's no baseball season.
Is he still doing distance learning right now? Like the worst, all of the worst things you could do at school for a kid.
Oh yeah. So he's in AP Gov, so they're still getting ready for an AP test, which will be online, and, you know, but they have to do the classes, and yeah, it's really, I feel terrible.
You can't flirt with anybody, you know, there's no bumping into your friends.
No sitting down in the cafeteria, you know, all the good stuff.
Well, you know, what's sad about that is how, I mean, it wasn't like it happened over months. I mean, this was literally, the door got shut in mid-March.
Yes.
And I think that's contributed to the culture shock.
Very sudden.
Yeah.
My daughter was in a production of Hello, Dolly, and they were about to shut everything down. And the director, I won't say his name or anything, said, oh, we're going to do a dress rehearsal tonight. And I walked in there. I said, the cops are going to raid this thing in 2 seconds because no one's supposed to be doing this. But I put my hats off to this guy. And sure enough, they weren't even done with, like, you know, I'd say there were 25 minutes in and it got shut down. I was really psyched at the cojones that this guy had to just at least have these kids get dressed up and everything else. But I knew he was putting his job on the line by doing this at the same time. You
know? Wow.
Yeah. Just the woman who was playing Dolly, I mean, was just an all-star, and imagine what this might've cost her, you know, like, I don't know who was going to be in the audience, but it might've been someone who really, you know, I think she's a three tool player, like, you know, singer, dancer.
Wow. Yeah.
All that stuff. I can't remember the other one.
Both of my girls are in college. One of them going in to be a senior, and her school's in New York.
Oh God!
That's just Pleasantville, which is, I don't know, it's about an hour from downtown, I guess. And you know, my other girl goes here in Rhode Island, Roger Williams. And you know, my oldest daughter is a film major, and my youngest daughter just declared a major as graphic design. So some of that stuff, you know, they're able to do around here. My oldest daughter, you know, she can't do film shoots on location. She can't, you know, there's a lot of stuff she can't do. So she's trying to be creative in her, with her friends and her crews, so to speak, trying to do this stuff online. And my other daughter is trying to do stuff too. So, you know, obviously you can't do anything at the school. They're both shut down and stuff. So it's a big change, you know. But my oldest is still working. She works in a drive-thru, which is good. But my other daughter worked at a nursing home. And so she can't work. She was in the dining service and not doing that anymore. So, you know, no visitors and stuff. So big changes for all of them, even in college. So.
Well, you know, school aside, I mean, we had our oldest son was going to get married on May 8th.
God.
And you can imagine, I mean, you know how weddings go. I mean, the planning for this went back probably 2 years practically.
Yeah.
And suddenly this thing blows open, and the facility said they had, you know, they canceled all events during, you know, like April, May or June or whatever. So they had, you know, there's a lot of planning and a lot of money at stake once you get into a situation like that. So they had to postpone the wedding, but again, multiply that by probably tens of thousands of weddings around the country. I mean, all of what we're talking about just speaks to the upheaval for everybody on a personal level, whether you're a cartoonist or an engineer, you know, I mean, it's just kind of like, wow, man, you know.
I had two 20s in my wallet when this first hit, and I think I still have them.
I was noticing I have not used any cash, although I will tell you this, the Amazon factor, to say there's certain other halves of my life who have taken, you know, full use of the
order online. I filled up my car.
Not like my expenses have gone down all that.
I filled up my car tank. I think I have a mini, but I've filled it up twice since early March.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good, you know.
And you know where I've snuck the cash, and I actually have a cartoon about it today, and I haven't posted it yet, is this guy's got a fold of money, you know, it's all Franklin's. And then at the end he goes, you know what? The thing at the self-checkout, I hope it still takes money, you know, the thing that you feed cash into. You know, people just
I worked the self-checkout thing today. Self-checkout is a big bugaboo with me with the grocery store.
Right.
So today's was about self-checkout, but it's amazing how busy it was. I mean, in our particular grocery store, it's usually kind of busy simply because I think they're all trying to make everybody do it anyway, but I personally detest it. So I'm the goofus that can't get the thing to, I actually referenced it in strip today. I'm probably the guy in panel four speaking off the panel, but it always discombobulates me. Makes me absolutely insane. I like to have people that I pay, you know, and give the person checking it out and everything.
Yeah. That's a game for somebody, you know,
I was so bored that I asked CVS if I could drive up to the drive up, like for each prescription and just keep going around. You know, maybe like 10, you know, 20 times. Well, yeah, because I have 20 prescriptions. But, hi again. Hi.
More to come.
Yeah.
I have a cartoon where this really, really despondent woman and her husband's patting her on the back, and she goes, I can't believe I actually want to go to Target. You know.
That's sad. Now, I guess now that's starting to get limited. I mean, it goes back and forth every day, but I guess some of them, are they not, you know, saying, you know, X number of people in the store at the time or something?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's definitely the case in mass. And just today they mandated masks for anybody.
For stores.
Is that only if you can't social distance?
What the governor said today was anywhere where you can't comfortably social distance. So he left a little leeway there for you to make up your mind. In other words, if you're out jogging and there's nobody around, you don't necessarily need one.
Who's exercising during all this? Well,
I've tried to get out and run.
But
then you see somebody running at you and you turn the other way, you're running down the street, you're jumping in front of cars. It's just not good.
You know? Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I had everybody has a daily routine, right? And at one point during the day, you go to work out and then you go to cartoon or whatever.
Yep.
And none of the facilities are open. So then suddenly you're buying 40-pound kettlebells and trying to like work out with chairs or whatever. And it starts to become real ad hoc after a while. But I mean, that's kind of how it's worked out, you know?
Yeah, no, I bought this device called a Health Rider in 1994. It's like a combination bike rower, you know, type thing. Been in my basement this whole time. Dragged it upstairs.
That was your workout right there.
I've been doing my back and forth, you know, because
well, you don't have to hang shirts on it anymore, you know.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I've been having dreams of Planet Fitness waking up in a cold sweat, so I must have gotten a workout somehow.
Yeah.
Who is your sweating one way or the other?
Right, exactly, yeah.
But I think just the fact that we're talking about all this is the other reason I think you feel like you have to do strips about it. There's so much material.
Well, I would agree with that. There's so much material, but it's almost like, and I don't want to say it's infinite, but the fact is if you start splitting it up, whether you're working with single panel or character or whatever, it is very interesting, all the little paths you can take with it, you know?
Speaking of impotent, are we allowed to say how bad our single friends are complaining right now? Or is there anybody here potentially? Because I have a guy who thinks he's never a friend of mine. He just thinks that his life is over. That's it, you know. But he's never going to step out again and have a lady friend or any of that. He is so depressed.
Yeah. There's that out there. There is definitely that out there.
Are we allowed to joke about it? I actually did one strip about it. It was about a couple that was going to suddenly – are we going to edit this part out?
Probably not.
My dog's like that.
What?
He's giving up.
No, this is great.
You can use that one, Steve.
Yeah.
Time for dogs. Everybody's around all the time. They're going on 100 walks.
Hey, a tiger got one once, right? Isn't that what everyone's saying?
Yeah.
I did not see Tiger King, by the way. You guys probably all did.
I tried it.
I couldn't watch it.
Keeps peeing on the same trees. I don't get it.
Maybe
that one will grow.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, it's just been, I don't know. How about this? Have you guys actually done a strip since all this that doesn't, you know, address the coronavirus even like fractionally?
Once we
sent a couple, yeah.
Oh, you have?
We
started, okay.
We haven't really all, Dave and Mike, I'm pretty sure we've, you know, some of them it's very tangential. You know, it's about, you know, homeschooling, which, you know, could have come up under another circumstance, but in this case, this is why they're doing it. You know, they're similar to maybe some we've done in the past about homework or that type of thing, but it's in this very specific, you know, scenario now.
I'm going to try and keep it just subtle, you know. I've done a few, and I actually feel funny not doing them with that subject. So I'm going to try and keep it at least a little subtle, you know.
What I'm trying to avoid is to say coronavirus 19, that type of thing, because, you know, some of the nomenclature going around about this, the coronavirus 19 and the pandemics and all that, that's why I kind of, you know, go over to terms like crisis, because I figure everybody gets it, you know, everybody knows what's going on. So I think when I have referenced it lately, and it's a lot, it's usually in a more subtle way, assuming that the reader already knows what I'm talking about. I don't know if that's.
Do you do Instagram at all, or have to do that hashtagging nonsense?
Yeah, and I'm not a really good guy to do hashtagging. I'll put stuff. Sometimes I'll put hashtag. I do, and I'll do hashtags, and I'll just put in a bunch of nonsense. Hashtag ferret, just to be a smart ass about it, you know.
So you don't do hashtag coronavirus, hashtag COVID-19.
I'll say pandemic. I'll just say pandemic or something. Because the other, you know, the words around this, the whole COVID and all that kind of stuff, are so heavily played out, and there's such a negative connotation that you almost, this is just me, but you almost run the risk of a very didactic type of explanation by putting terminology like that in there. So I've tried very hard to just assume that the readers are kind of in the same boat that we all are. So that if I'm referencing school being out, I think they get what that means, you know?
Right, yeah.
So it's a little more global, I guess.
Right. When you collect them in the book later, you could address it in the introduction.
There's going to be plenty to address, trust me. I got all
kinds. You know, I think working from home is a pretty, you know, is one you can get a lot of mileage out of, so...
Yeah, I mean, and that's another one. We've done plenty of people work from home. We could have been doing some of these jokes whenever.
Oh, for sure.
But people know why they're working from home now, which adds a new layer to it.
Right.
That doesn't seem like insensitive in the least. You know what I mean? That I think there's a lot of, and there has been already a lot. I think was it Lars Kenseth who did the Bop the Beaver cartoon? You know, the guys at the amusement park and. Like all the other beavers are working from home, and there's only one beaver there that's actually bopping his head up. So I thought that was priceless. You know, that was a great cartoon.
There's been some funny. There's the Where's Waldo ones where it's like Waldo and two other people. Oh, yeah. This huge field. I'm not sure who did that one. I wish I could give the credit.
See, we're laughing. There's no, you know,
Listen to this one. I just saw this the other day. It's a New Yorker cartoon, and I have to quote this thing out because I just thought it was so funny. It's a guy – I'm pulling this up here, so forgive me. It's a guy in a boat, in a life raft, with fish everywhere in a huge, like, almost hurricane. Boats are going down, and it looks like just absolute chaos, and it's titled, This Is It, The Time to Finish Your Novel. Oh my God! And the artist, I think, is I don't know this particular cartoonist. It's signed HA. So, for once, I don't know one of these guys. Steve, you might be able to help me out here.
Yeah,
I know. I know. Bob Eckstein did a cartoon after they closed all the Starbucks. The guy used the excuse for not being able to finish his novel because he couldn't sit inside and with his laptop.
Well, I saw there was one the other day. I think I don't know who did this one, but it was about the character. It was two characters walking with the masks on, and they said something to the effect of "You can't tell who's talking because they have the masks on."
Right.
I got to start writing these down because I said that one too.
Yeah.
Has anyone done that? That like you know not who's talking, but what they're whether they're smiling or what? I asked my wife. I said, "What do you think is more expressive, the mouth or the eye?" We didn't really come to an agreement on that because, you know, it's different for everybody, but you could definitely hide what you got going on from the expression.
Oh, for sure.
There's some comedy in that, I'm sure, you know.
Right. Well, and the thing is, just drawing a mask on your character is really, it's just like a very unnatural thing to be drawing on characters. I mean, it's a very unusual thing to get used to visually.
I screw up down here. The bottom part is where I mess it up. This part, you know, over the nose is not so bad, but
well, and my you know, my characters don't have round heads per se, so I think it's more of a it's a little bit of a trick. So I did a little practicing before I got into it. So by the time I get to be an expert at doing masks on my characters, then everything will get better.
My mask is here, and the nose is here.
Yeah, Davis had to draw them on snouts.
That's not easy. Yeah, that's
sure. Not easy.
Yeah,
you know, you just do what you can, I guess, and you know, people get it. I've seen a million different ways of how people handle it, but it's just odd what you have to kind of reconfigure in your skills to address it. Suddenly, I'm drawing a face mask that I never thought I'd be drawing before. You know, so
my wife can tell when I'm angry because I have more wrinkles.
There you go.
Here, you know.
Yeah,
so that's all.
Keep wearing the hat, right? That helps.
Yeah.
I am surprised at what a business it's become with these face masks. I thought they were hard to find, but every time I get on social media, there's
That's
everybody and their brother selling these things. I don't know.
Yeah, I've bought a few.
No. They're not going away.
No, that's well put. Yeah.
And even when we're back going back to work and everything else, I think we'll all be fully masked.
We can bet on that, I'm sure.
I know at least a couple people on this call grow up reading superhero comic books. So the idea of, going out and wearing a mask is probably not.
Did anyone do a Lone Ranger one yet at all? Because that's pretty obvious, right?
Right.
Well, that's what, how Mike Pence said he didn't want to wear the mask so he could look people in the eye. Maybe he was thinking of the Lone Ranger mask, but without the eye holes.
Yeah.
Who wore those masked everybody's, something. Has anybody shown a complete lack of sympathy for the fact that sort of what we do has not super duper changed other than coming up with ideas, So we make cartoons on a computer or whatever and send them out.
Well, Dave had mentioned that when we were talking earlier. It's not like the actual, you're still sitting in your house drawing cartoons. That part hasn't changed.
You just can't believe.
I'm losing tens of dollars by sitting here and doing cartoons online. There hasn't been a super, no one feels any sympathy for us whatsoever. So
it's probably the epitome of non-essential, I suppose. It really is. But we're still here and kicking.
Well, on that note,
we matter.
Before we run out of time, I want to give you guys a chance to tell everybody where they could find you and what you have in the works, so maybe you can make tens more dollars at some point with things that you want to sell.
Money.
We'll start with you. Where's the
you? Thanks a lot.
Are we gonna see it? Are we gonna see it soon?
Yeah, keep saying that. Yes, I'm trying to get the whole thing collated. I was actually going to get a hold of you because I got some questions, but some logistical questions. But yeah, I got it lined up, and there's a lot of material to put together there. So I've started to kind of paginate the book and everything. And we got that going. We got it going. So keeps me busy.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And Tim, I know you have some new merchandise, I believe. You're always rolling out some new stuff.
Yeah, I came out with around the first of the year, a new story coloring book. It's a bullying theme with Aesop and his pet Cloud Ominous. And it's about Ominous gets bullied by a bully Cloud because he can't. The bully Cloud makes fun of him because Ominous can't thunder as loudly as the bully Cloud. And so it's that story. It's an important subject. And, I had a lot of schools interested in having me in and, talking about it, buying a bunch of them, and then this hit. So everything's on hold. But that's my latest one. And, Sour Grapes is just keeping going, I'm lucky enough to still be in the newspapers. They haven't closed me out at all, so that's a good thing. So
that is a good thing.
They need something to put in there. There's no reporters left, so right. They might be on the front page pretty soon.
That's right.
Definitely some content.
And Steve, what do you got? I know if people want a cartoons by Steve O. Mugg, there are plenty of options now.
Well, can I start by saying it's taken me an hour to get the best angle to hide my chin, so.
we'll start over.
We'll
start from the beginning.
There's Tunes by Steve-O is on Facebook, Instagram, somewhere else. Oh, Comics Box, COMXBOX, which is a blog that's sort of not happening, but there's a few of the cartoonists are on it. And recently on Cartoon Collections, which is sort of an offshoot that Bob Mankoff did coming after Cartoon Bank. He's not the editor anymore. And he basically combined, actually is a parent company of Cartoon Stock, which is based in England. Anyway, if you get on Cartoon Collections or Cartoon Stock, you just put my name in and you can find a lot of stuff there. Funny Times, Weekly Humorist. As of the last issue, American Bystander number 14, that's a great Well, those are all great, to be honest with you. A couple of Bob Eckstein books, one that's already out called Everyone's a Critic, and one that's going to come out in October. God willing that presses are still working, called All is Fair in Love and War. Yeah, that's it right now. I'd hit cartoon collections because there's merchandise to be sold.
Merchandising.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on. This was a terrific conversation. Really, one of the best. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
I think it was fantastic.
We have to do this again.
Yeah, definitely.
This platform is fantastic. We should do video podcasts.
I think we just invented a new genre for ourselves.
I'm sure no one else thought of this.
Yes, there's never been a video podcast before.
No one's done the Brady Bunch looking side to side either. You know, that's ever been done.
Great. I've been looking in the corners behind you guys trying to figure out all the books and toys you have. I think that's, you know, one of the benefits.
Yeah. Pat, you have interesting lighting there. It's sort of a noir thing going.
Well, kind of. I'm like, I'm at a window here.
Yes. The light.
So now I'll have like a sunburn right here and, you know.
That's a classic look.
Pat has one of the best jazz albums of all time, by the way, behind his head, Blue Train with Lee Morgan and everybody else.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
The Coltrane and all that.
Just the best, you know.
The Live and Swinging up here.
And this is that Miles? Who is that?
What's that? Live and Swinging?
Yeah. Who's in that?
Rat Pack collection. But
okay.
This Mighty Blue Kings. Can you
see? Is the album cover better than the music on Live and Swinging, or all the same?
It's probably all the same. The Mighty Blue Kings is unbelievable, man. They're a band out of Chicago that was probably about as jump blues as you're ever going to get. Probably 1948 sounding. Fabulous band. Love them.
Cool.
Yeah.
Everybody tried to steal that sound back in the mid-90s, more or less, right?
Setzer and everybody?
Yeah, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
My God. Voodoo Daddy's a good band.
They're all, you know, they got to be good to, you know, try to cop that sound, you know?
Oh, my God, yeah. They're a really fabulous band. I saw them, I think I've seen them a couple of times, actually. It's a really good band.
They brought acoustic sound, too, back, which I was very psyched about, you know?
Right. And they actually, when I saw them, they had, you know, obviously they wear all the zoot suits and all this kind of stuff. And I remember the first time I'd seen them is about 25 years ago. And they even had cigarette girls. I'm not kidding. Remember the whole trophy 1940s thing where they have the little tray and they're walking around selling cigarettes and matches?
That brings it back to the cartoons with Peter Arno, right? Sort of.
Very Peter Arno. Yeah.
That kind of look.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was amazing.
They must have been smoking hot.
Well played.
On that note, I think we'll call it a day. Thank you again, gentlemen. And thank you for tuning in to our very first video.
See you guys.
Bye.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.